Our next speaker is Professor Dwight Lee, Ramsey Professor of Economics and Private Enterprise at the University of Georgia. He received his PhD from the University of California, San Diego in 1972. Professor Lee's research has covered a variety of areas, including the economics of the environment and natural resources, the economics of political decision making, public finance, law and economics, and labor economics. During his career, Professor Lee has published over 120 articles in academic journals and has co-authored 8 books as well as other publications. He's lectured at universities and conferences in the US, in Europe, in South America, Asia, and Africa. And his remarks this morning will be on the topic of let's celebrate the system that makes diversity worth celebrating. Professor Lee.
Thank you very much, Ingrid. It's a real pleasure to be here. This is my first Philadelphia Society meeting. I hope it's not my last. I should have been coming to these a long time ago. I want to talk about diversity. I think everybody knows that diversity has become almost a unifying theme on college campuses today. Certainly that's true at my university, at the University of Georgia. Now, any student starting this year, the fall of 2002, has to satisfy a diversity requirement in order to graduate. Without celebrating diversity, they just aren't worthy of a degree from the University of Georgia. Now, there's a lot to be said for promoting a greater understanding of our cultural differences and our diversity, and in celebrating how that diversity can enrich our lives. New and different things, interacting with people with different understandings is a wonderful opportunity for all of us to enrich our lives, particularly in this increasingly global world we live in. My problem with diversity is the way it's celebrated on campuses is that those who are most vociferous about celebrating our diversity are invariably those that are most hostile to the economic system that makes diversity worth celebrating, and that's the free market economy. Instead, what we see is a lot of championing of economic policies that, by politicizing our differences, turning these differences into political issues, what they're doing is they're turning diversity into something that is not worth celebrating. They're turning diversity into a source of social conflict. If you politicize our differences, people end up celebrating their diversity, all right, but they end up celebrating them with some pretty high-octane, lethal fireworks. The way we've seen people celebrating the diversity in the former Yugoslavia, the Middle East, Chechnya, Rwanda, I'm probably pronouncing these countries correctly, Burundi, the Congo, and other multicultural hotspots around the world. On the other hand, markets, we all know markets create wealth, create enormous amounts of wealth. What a lot of people don't understand is the why of why markets create so much wealth. And then they create so much wealth because they bring people together into a cooperative enterprise, if you will. They bring people together with different cultural backgrounds, different understandings and skills, interests and specializations, different natural resource endowments. They bring people, all these people together, and what they do is the market converts these differences into opportunities for mutual gains through productive interaction and cooperation. Taking full advantage of diversity requires some mechanism whereby people can share information with each other. Share information on what I can do for you, what you can best do for me. That's the type of information that you have to bring people together to create wealth, to make the most use of our diversity, and that's exactly the kind of information that gets transmitted through markets in the form of market prices. We often think of prices as ways whereby these suppliers are ripping us off. Prices are ways whereby we communicate with each other vital information about what we can best do to help each other. And they not only provide us with this information, they provide us with tremendous motivation to act appropriately on that information, to respond to the information people are sending us as if we are as concerned about their welfare as we are our own. We're not, obviously. We're more concerned with our own welfare than we are with the welfare with people around the world. But in response to market prices, we act as if we're as concerned with others. We take actions in our own benefit that benefit others as well. Markets penalize those who sink into parochialism and cultural isolation, and it rewards those who expand their markets by becoming more knowledgeable and sensitive to a wide variety of culturally influenced interests and concerns. And as I indicated before, it's because of this that markets allow us to become wealthy. But the most important advantage of markets is not just that they allow us to become wealthy by making the most of our diversity, but they go beyond that and they turn diversity into a source of something possibly even more important. I say possibly because I am an economist here, but even more important than wealth. And that is, economists have long recognized that the main benefit from international commerce comes from human improvement that only diversity can provide. And I quote from John Stuart Mill, 1848, "It is hardly possible to overrate the value for the improvement of human beings of things which bring them in contact with persons dissimilar to themselves and with modes of thought and action unlike those with which they are familiar. Commerce is the purpose of the far greater part of the communication which takes place between civilized nations. It is in vain to inculcate feelings of brotherhood among mankind by moral influences alone, unless a sense of community of interest can also be established, and that sense we owe to commerce. In addition to enabling us to benefit fully from the diversity that already exists, markets also allow for more diversity, for diversity to expand. And it does this by fostering an environment within which freedom can flourish. Obviously, some diversity will always survive in the absence of freedom. But it's always a cautious and constrained diversity, bumping up against the intolerance of the status quo and the excessive cautions of consensus. With freedom, there's no need to promote diversity. With freedom, diversity will flourish spontaneously in far more ways and far more productive ways than can ever be politically programmed or planned, particularly by our diversity advocates on campus. Markets expand the range of acceptable freedom by imposing discipline on it, by ensuring that when people are left free to pursue their own interest, they do so in ways that are accountable to the interest of others. You take away markets, and you take away the discipline that markets impose, and you cannot tolerate freedom. The best example of that is the environmental concerns we have. The reason we have excessive pollution is because we don't have markets for the use of the environment as a waste sink. I can pollute and not consider the cost I'm imposing on others because there's no price that springs up that makes me reflect that cost, makes me take that cost into consideration. We don't tolerate freedom in the absence of markets to pollute. You take markets away, you strip markets away, and you reduce the tolerance for freedom. Undermine the discipline of marketplace and you undermine the freedom necessary for diversity to thrive. So I find it very, very disheartening to see so many of those on campus who claim to be in favor of diversity, who want to celebrate diversity, oppose the marketplace and the discipline that it imposes. Whether this opposition to the market springs from ignorance or from the desire to use politics to promote private advantages, or from some combination of two is not my concern here today, although I do have some opinions on that question. The prevailing preferences among diversity advocates on campus is to replace what they see as the unacceptable competition of the marketplace with the spirit of cooperation that they somehow think will be nourished by collective action, by political action. The trouble with that view is that competition is not the result of markets. Competition is the result of scarcity. As long as we have scarcity, and I predict that we will at least until the sun goes out, as long as we have scarcity, people wanting more than they can have, we're going to have competition. Replacing market decisions with political decisions simply replaces market competition with political competition. All those lobbyists in Washington, lobbyists in special interest and national organizations, are in Washington, D.C., not because they like the weather there. They're engaging in political competition. And political competition is not only less productive, it generates less wealth than market competition, but political competition tends to turn diversity into a source of social divisiveness and hostility. The advantages of political competition go to those who are best able to masquerade self-interest behind a facade of concern for virtue and social justice. With one view of righteousness pitted against another, and this competition can easily become a conflict between noble principles with accommodation and compromise viewed with contempt by all sides. This tendency for political competition to degenerate into battles between good and evil is aggravated by the need to activate broad political support for your cause. In markets, people are activated by the expectation of some very marginal increases and some rather mundane benefits. We'll work awfully hard for things that are often very marginal and, in the eyes of most, rather mundane. However, people are seldom motivated politically. They're seldom motivated to take political action by the marginal or the mundane. Rather, mobilizing political support requires making people feel as if they're part of a crusade for some emotionally compelling cause, even when the political objective is nothing more inspiring than grabbing transfers and extorting money from others. The rhetoric is always social justice, a morally just cause. The steel industry, they want tariff protection, not just because it protects them against competition, they can put more money in their pocket at the expense of the consumer. They want tariff protection to protect the American economy. Agricultural interest, they want subsidies, not just because they want money from the poor to be transferred to rich farmers so they can have a jacuzzi on their private jet. They want tariffs, they want subsidies in agriculture because they're out to save the family farm. Public education lobby, they oppose vouchers, not because they want a captive clientele and they don't like competition. They want vouchers for the sake of our children. It brings a tear to your eye to listen to them talk about the sake of our children. When we politicize our cultural, ethnic, and sexual differences, when we go beyond just kind of grabbing transfers, but when we start politicizing these cultural, ethnic, and sexual differences, then the potential for acrimony in political competition escalates quickly. And this is exactly what is happening and supported on campuses in the name of celebrating our diversity with policies that treat people as groups, as members of groups with rights to special outcomes rather than as individuals with rights to equal opportunities. More and more groups are discovering that outrage and exaggerated claims over their victimization is becoming a political currency that's good for securing special interest benefits at the expense of others. And rather than promoting peaceful and productive interaction, our differences are becoming the source of self-righteous intolerance between increasingly hostile interests. And we all lose. We all lose from such political competition. But in the long run, those who lose the most, those who are most at risk, are members of minority groups whose welfare is most vulnerable to the whims of political fad and fashion. Now, we in America have been blessed with an impressive, not perfect, but certainly an impressive history of social diversity and social harmony based on that diversity, thanks to our political traditions of individual rights, constitutional limited government, and free market institutions that have flourished under these political traditions. And the legacy of our political economy makes it quite easy for people to dismiss the possibility that diversity in this country can degenerate into the social atrocities that it has in so many other countries. But remote as that possibility may seem, I think dismissing it would be a mistake. The best hope for maintaining social harmony and the enormous benefits from diversity is by understanding the dangers in attempting to promote diversity by politicizing our differences in order to engage in a negative-sum political competition. Unfortunately, I think this understanding seems to have completely escaped the most vocal advocates of diversity on our college campuses today, and it also seems to be fading fast as a restraint on many destructive public policies that we see enacted. So I say, let's celebrate our diversity on our college campuses, but let's do so by making sure that our students acquire an understanding of the system of limited government and free markets that make diversity worth celebrating. Thank you very much.